Hello and welcome to the inaugural edition of Rake the Moon. I'm Andrew Hutt of BBC Radio Wiltshire. I will be joined each week by founder of the Moonraker, one-time Swindon advertiser journalist, long-time member of Troy Archibald Henville's personal hit list, Sam Morshead. So hello, Sam.
Hello, Andrew. Troy Archibald Henville. That's a long name from the past, eh? Brings back funny memories, great memories.
And I hope they are overall positive, despite me throwing him in within about 30 seconds of a starting.
Oh, I think that's perfectly fair.
At some point, we will do the Troy Archibald Henville special, I would say, no doubt. Now, the traditional format of podcasting demands, well, maybe not demands, but there's often the banter section, which is the code for where we each ask each other about our lives. I'm extremely dull. Sam's life, as far as I've discovered so far, consists of child rearing and a lot of meetings. So do you want to talk about that, Sam?
I know where what you're talking about there. It's the number of times that I leave a press conference after the manager's bit and before the player's bit because I've got to deal with something else, which I'm not sure how well goes down with the press officer. I've certainly taken it in the neck a few times for that.
Yes, you have.
Yeah. But look, I think banter is all well and good, but I think what we're trying to create with this pod is something that adds a little bit different side of podcasting to the Swindon landscape, which is very much fan-led as it stands. And whilst we are obviously both supporters of the club, we come from a slightly different place in our working lives, being intricately involved with it too. So I think a slightly more serious podcast without being so serious that it becomes too dull would be where we're aiming for. So I'm not sure how many people want to hear about the night that I just had with a snivelling baby, but if anyone wants to send me a message and send some condolences at this time of year for sleepless nights, they're very welcome. But for the whole, I think we'll stick to talking about matters on the field and off the field at the County Ground.
I think that's wise, though. You can email Sam for child rearing advice if you wish from first-hand experience. And I guess you've touched on the first point we were going to dig into, really, because there is a pretty healthy diet of Swindon contact there. Let me weigh that. Low Strangers, Supporters Club, Fools Rush In. So there is lots of stuff out there. So other than us both feeling we're missing out because we're white men between the ages of 35 and 50 currently without a podcast, what are we hoping for, do you think, if we can get Rake the Moon working effectively?
Yeah, I think that it is very important for all males between 35 and 50 to have a podcast, but I think we've got something to talk about too. I think we can give a different insight behind the curtain at the County Ground and try and dig into subjects with a little bit more rigor and a little bit more depth and tell some untold stories and discuss thematically things that are happening, will happen and have happened at Swindon Town. Create something that's engaging for everybody, that tells people stuff they don't know, as well as hearing a couple of people who talk a lot about the club, talk even more about the club. So I don't think that we're going to be going into, you know, a huge amount of depth on match by match basis or anything like that. I think we're going to aim for themes and dig into certain subjects and try and create something that has general community value. That's one of the big pillars of the Moonraker and of Counterpress, which is the product that I'm also building that the Moonraker sits on, is having value over volume and value for the community. So that's the aim, Andrew. I'm pretty sure we can deliver it, but we will see over the coming weeks.
You can hear me touching wood there that we can do that. But yes, I think if you want those sort of pre-match previews and post-match reviews, there's a lot of out there. There's a kind of lot of stuff out there, and I think it's kind of good for fans to let off steam and do that, to be honest. But I'm not sure us kind of musing a bit more sagely 72 hours, well, not sagely, but a bit more 72 hours after the game has gone, I suppose, isn't going to help anyone. So yeah, I think we're better off on a sort of broader path, really. And Swindon Town being what it is, if there's not something to discuss that's not directly matters on the pitch, we'd both be very surprised.
I think that we all know that there's always something going on, isn't there? It's not a dull club to be involved with. And there's always more storylines and more substance to the story than maybe can be got at in individual articles or in press conferences. And I think podcasting is a great way to delve into that sort of part of storytelling and of journalism. So we know the madness that has been around the club basically across this last 25-year period and beyond. And ironically, it still feels like it's happening, even though there's a solid performance on the pitch at the moment and the club are pushing for promotion. It's still not settled down. And there's lots of different threads and strands that go into the everyday of a football club, and different supporters are interested in different parts of it. And there's a lot to dig into that you can't necessarily get into when you're doing the routine weekly diaried coverage of the club. So there'll be all sorts to talk about. And looking forward to it.
So yeah, no, it should be good. Like I say, sometimes it is a bit easy for us to, maybe I'm biased because we've got three this week or so, or over the next couple of weeks, there's so many press conferences and then post-match interviews and then press conferences and post-match interviews that it can.
Well, for you, Andrew.
Yes. You, I appreciate you merely swanning it out as you please, of course. But yes, just as a general kind of reflection on things, it's nice to sort of step back a little bit and breathe the air occasionally, I suppose. And of course, we are here for your feedback as well, for early editions and future editions, topic suggestions, anything you would want. So I assume the best way is to get in touch with you via email, Sam, for thoughts.
Yeah, so you can get in touch directly via editor@themoonraker.news, or you can DM me on social media, and I will endeavour to get everything into a big bundle of questions. And if we have enough questions, Andrew, I think we might have to go into Q&A territory. I think that's the typical second step within podcasting. I'm just learning as I go along, but I think that if we find that level of interest, then we'll separate the shows out into two and have a Q&A session as well as the regular deep dive.
Yes, I think we're willing to be questioned fair without fear or favour or something like that. Shall we pick up a couple of our talking points for this week next?
Let's do it.
So first up, we should probably look at Ollie Clark, which is more than any of us get to do at the moment, of course, because he is busy serving a 7-game ban. And as things stand, we know not exactly, certainly from public consumption, shall we say, much as rumours swirl around, as to quite why he is sitting on the sidelines for such an extended period. The FA obviously released their statement, which is the first one of such a nature I can recall with the words indecent in it. So, you know, this is a matter of some seriousness and concern, I would say. I think, and hopefully you'll back me up on this, Sam, one thing we can clearly knock on the head of the possible reasons for the length of the ban is kind of use of racist or inappropriate language, because the FA statements of those kinds have a completely different wording to what they put out. So I assume you are confident enough in my analysis to cast that as a suggestion aside.
Yeah, I am. It's got absolutely nothing to do with any form of racist or homophobic abuse or any other sort. And it, you know, it's not largely violent conduct either. I've seen people talking about, well, he headbutted someone in the tunnel, or he punched a player or something like that. It's nothing to do with that. I think, Andrew, that we're both loosely aware of what the initial allegations were before they went into this 4-month-long period as the FA investigated. I'm very conscious of not saying what those allegations were, because I don't know until the written reasoning comes out what actually ended up on the docket. And therefore, it kind of sways the conversation a little bit. I do think that the process that has taken 4 months to get there and leading to an endpoint which did not offer clarity on where the club and the player stand on the relevant charges, is an example of where the disciplinary process loses its way a little bit. I think it was incumbent on the FA to put their written reasoning out with their statement. And I know why they don't, and it's typical practice that it takes a little bit longer for those written reasons to come out. But in an instance like this, I think there is a need for context that is for public consumption around a particular storyline. And I think that they have not done themselves any favours, the FA, with this. And evidently, it's also thrown up the situation where the club statement contradicts the FA statement with regards to denial of charges, or it would appear to. And so we sort of all sit here in limbo, waiting to see exactly what was said at a hearing that happened 4 months after an allegation. It's all just, it just feels a little bit drawn out and unnecessarily long, let alone, you know, the verdict itself. I think we have to wait and see before we get to discussing the merits of a 7-match ban for the level of offence that is alleged. But it does feel that this could have been dealt with faster, and that would have been more suitable for every party involved, not just Swindon and Ollie Clark, but Cardiff and the FA as well.
Yeah, it does appear to have taken a considerable time for, from your reporting, just for the actual hearing to take place, for you know, an incident that's happened in the early weeks of the season, let alone regardless of what we think or discover about the verdict and the actual reasons why.
Yeah, I mean, the hearing itself was in the same day as the statement. So for it to have taken that long for an admission of the charges seems peculiar to me. You would have thought that could have all taken much less time if the player was readily admitting to what he had been accused of. But as the club have said, and it's my understanding too, that, you know, they've contested this quite considerably over the period between the alleged offences and the release of the statement and the hearing itself. So it doesn't sort of stack up from a timeline perspective. And as is often the case with Swindon Town, it leaves far too much grey where we could really do with some black and white.
And that usually gets filled in by people with different colour paints, I think, as well, to try and stretch a metaphor. I think the one thing I will say is, normally, as and when these FA reasons come out, when you do read them for any number of cases, they are pretty thorough. And I didn't think they hold much back. So I can just remember looking at various ones involving, you know, Swindon players and other things in the past. And if player X has referred to player Y as words not suitable for any form of family podcast, then they do spell that out. So I'm prepared. This is an unusual phrase to come from my lips, but I think I am prepared to trust the FA in terms of them revealing the kind of process in detail, and then perhaps we can fish around with, you know, our own opinions on how the hearing went from those reasons and, you know, the size of the ban.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think that they do typically come out with the substance of both sides' arguments and how the disciplinary panel gets to a certain position, and based on what evidence put in front of them, because in this case, obviously, the evidence will have been relatively light, but they will probably based it on a probability rather than beyond reasonable doubt, as we know we're talking about a tribunal, a disciplinary, rather than the law itself. So I think that they will go into some detail. If they don't, that would be peculiar and would just cause more upset and concern. So I would hope that we do get a full and thorough explanation of both the process and the arguments. This gap, though, just feels, when it's a matter that is meriting such a considerable suspension, that it really feels like it should come with some more context than a 150-word statement.
Yes, that's what's that? That's about 22 words per game banned, I think, which seems quite a low ratio. Don't email us about the maths. We ought to mention football at some point. Do you think Swindon miss him significantly?
Well, I think evidently that they do, and I think that they miss him either as a member of the back three, which would be contrary to a lot of supporters' opinions, or as one of those midfield three, as he'd been recently so successful in over the course of early December. He's a communicator, which in the first half of last year, before he got moved back, I think the Fleetwood game was the first game that he got moved back into the back three, and there was an issue that Holloway had identified down the right-hand side of communication, just talking to each other, and that's where he went and filled the gap. And while he's not necessarily a natural defender, and he has had to learn it on the job, and that probably leads to some of the positional stuff which fans would call him out for, I think that Swindon's general performances and general stability have been improved by him, or were improved by him being there at least for a period of 6 months. And then when he moves into midfield, he's just got an engine. You know, he's just for a guy who's in his mid-30s and will undoubtedly have a few sleepless nights because of childcare. There's childcare mentioned number one. There'll be plenty of them over the next few weeks, I'm sure. Then he's got a lot in the tank, and he leads by example, and he's a motivational presence, and he's respected generally in the dressing room. And, you know, he's been a kind of figurehead for the team, just as been a figurehead elsewhere in other dressing rooms. He's been PFA representative, and he's one of the guys that the junior pros will look up to. And while he can still provide some of that off the field, not having that on the field means that someone else has to step up into that role who maybe isn't as naturally suited to it within the team. And does that detract from their other responsibilities? And at a time when you're playing game after game after game, as Swindon will have been during the festive period, then you need as many options as you possibly can. And just being without their captain has and will undoubtedly play a major role.
I personally think, to use one of these hipster phrases, I'm not quite sure they've got a midfielder who, what's the term, kind of crashes the box like he does. So he's quite good at arriving late to finish off things. That does seem to be a bit of his speciality. I know you've got Darren Aldake, who can do clever things in advanced positions, but I feel like that's a skill they miss a little bit if he's not in midfield.
I would agree, and certainly given Tom Nicholls goes back and back and back with every passing week to form a deeper and deeper lying midfield role, he would probably be the only other one that you would think would be natural in that sort of crashing the box role. But I think the goal that he scored late on against Peterborough in the trophy kind of illustrates those qualities of having the engine, standing up for the team, hitting the box, as you mentioned, and winning a game. And sometimes during his time at Swindon, it's not been evident the best parts of his game and what he brings to the side. But I think under Holloway, certainly in 2025, he has been an absolutely pivotal presence within that squad.
Well, there's Ollie Clark. I'm sure we will be revisiting this as and when those FA written reasons do finally emerge from Football Association headquarters. And now to everyone's favourite window, no longer the round one or the square one, but the transfer one. And Swindon have been acting with arguably unusual speed, having already brought in two players. And as Moonraker subscribers will know, a third appears to be well on the way. Touch wood, fingers crossed, etc., etc. It's all happened faster than a speedy winger from Brentford, which is perhaps where we will start, Sam. But, I mean, first of all, how impressed are you by Swindon going kind of rat-a-tat-tat and getting in two players so quickly?
Yeah, I'm very impressed. It shows plenty of intent, and there's been plenty of preparation going into this one. This is players that have been on the radar for a little while, some even going back as far as last January being on the list for conversation. And I think Swindon have found players they think can add value quickly and got them in as soon as possible so that they can gel quickly, settle down and give as much value to the team for as long as possible as they try and get promoted out of League Two. So overall, it's been a very strong and very impressive start to the window. And that's not always been the case for teams at Swindon, not just under the current administration, but ones previously. So, yeah, A stars all round so far.
Let's sort of break down the players. Orokigbe appears to be fast. He's got a little bit of experience, especially having been on the books of sort of Chesterfield on loan for the last part of last season, where, of course, they got into the playoffs. They tiptoed in right at the end. But he appears to be the kind of rapid mover that Swindon don't think they have, and the dribbler with the ball they thought they had until Danny Butterworth's hamstring kind of went ping.
Yeah, and I think that they've been looking for a player like this even before Butterworth's hamstring went to Accrington. Olakigbe has got a little bit more pace and he's perhaps a little bit more direct than Danny Butterworth, whom I'm not sure Ian Holloway has necessarily found that the kind of role in the team that he would have wanted for him. So it's going to be interesting to see how he plays wide of a three going forwards. He certainly offers that directness, gets the byline, put a cross in, cut in off the left-hand side to have a pop off his right. If you speak to people who've watched him play on his two lone stints in the EFL over the last year or so, I think the key thing that they say is the end product needs to improve, but there's certainly something that Brentford see in him. You know, he's on a senior deal in the Premier League and has played in the Premier League. So there's potential there. It's whether he can fully realise that at League Two level, how he does, you know, physically, and how he does against some of the pitches that he's likely to come up against in the next few weeks. Obviously, we know that sometimes the lower reaches of League Two can be a bit treacherous as we enter winter. So, if he can contribute a few more assists, if he can get in and add a goal or two, then it's another option that Holloway has amongst his forwards, and he continues to stack them and rack them.
Yeah, there's a couple of goals for Chesterfield last season as they eventually kind of tiptoed their way into the playoffs right on the final day. We did do a kind of pre-match news conference with Ian Holloway before the Harrogate game, which was largely sort of transfer window and Olakigbe based appropriately enough, given how that was frozen off extremely rapidly, along with most of the rest of the League Two programme. And he was certainly on the kind of more energetic side about having brought in Olakigbe and, like I say, just kind of adding something a bit different to what they've got.
I would honestly not be surprised one day if he named seven forwards on his bench, Holloway. He just loves having different options available to him to try and change a game. And I'm not surprised he's enthused by this one, given the fact that he is, you know, rated relatively highly at Brentford, that he has been given the faith to play in the Premier League, and that he has a little bit of raw pace, which is perhaps something which Swindon have not necessarily had amongst their forwards. I think that there's certainly a lot to theoretically be excited about, but it's going to be about how he settles both into the shape and the systems that Holloway wants, and also how he deals physically with the rest of the league.
So that's Michael Olakigbe, winger signed on loan from Brentford. Now, I got half wind the next signing before it happened through a friend of mine texting me that a friend of his had said, "We've seen the Swindon squad at the Belfry, and they appear to be taking photos of someone who looks about 12 with a number 2 shirt on. And we presume this did in fact turn out to be someone who thankfully is older than 12, has played a little bit of men's football, but is taking his first sort of real step with a loan, if you like. And this is Aidan Borland from Aston Villa, who's a Scottish under 21 international. And in your kind of reporting, Sam, everyone seems to think he's got a bit of something about him.
Yeah, there's serious excitement about him at Villa. They paid a pretty reasonable fee for him as a 16-year-old to bring him down from Scotland. I think that fee could go into the seven figures, depending on how things go, which is obviously sizable for a teenager. He's highly rated in their academy system and has obviously captained the youth team to a season of remarkable success, winning a couple of titles and the FA Youth Cup last year. So there's plenty there to be excited about. But I think what Swindon are excited about is that he, if he stacks up physically again against the likes of League Two central defences and central midfields, then technically he's a very good footballer. And they feel that he can offer significant cover across midfield. It might be that he doesn't start a lot of games, particularly for the next month or two, depending on the injury situation at the club. but there's a huge amount of excitement about what he can do and what his future holds. And it's yet another example of the strong relationship that Swindon and Villa have at the moment, which has typically brought only good things over recent seasons.
Yeah, I think the physicality is always quite interesting, because I remember Kane Kessler-Hayden making his debut up at Scunthorpe, I think it was, and he looked pretty slight, but you soon sort of kind of the pace and the fact that Scunthorpe's defence just couldn't deal with him. I think he won a kind of penalty up there, and you thought, oh, you know, maybe he's got the tools to handle this physically after all, and so it proved. So I guess we kind of hope that Villa's judgment as to what they think their players can handle is good, along with Swindon's.
Yeah, and I think it's important to note here that, you know, he's not being brought in to be a regular starter necessarily, though it might prove that he's good enough to do it. What Swindon want is someone who has got the ability to offer something a little bit different as and when situations demand. And they didn't quite get that from Adam Murphy, which is what they'd hoped to get during his time here from Bristol City. And I think this is probably a step up. There's a different sort of technical quality to Borland, and both as a holding midfielder, but also as a playmaker. I think there's an opportunity for him to prove his worth here, to even get a shot at the Villa first team squad in pre-season. So he'll be itching to make an impression. And I think under Holloway, he's got a great opportunity to spend four or five months learning a role and learning men's football.
We'll come on to who we think will likely be incoming number three. But I guess Villa raises us the Finlay Munro potential departure klaxon, which everyone has been dreading hearing. So in common with the worst perils of the January window, I know the kind of outlet that has reported that there's some interest from Preston and Orient, is ultimately kind of run by someone who's got a reasonable reputation as having good contact. So are we likely to be Kessler-Hayden, do you think?
Well, I mean, that report, as I understand it, is correct in that both Orient and Preston have made themselves known as interested. But there's a lot more that would go into this than just being interested. There's all sorts of elements to this situation. And really, from a Swindon perspective, it's kind of hold your breath for 10 days. There's within the terms of a typical season-long loan deal, there's a return recall window, which allows the parent club or the renting club, so to speak, to return or recall a player. And that window for Finlay Munro, I believe, ends in the middle of January. And after that, Swindon would be well within their rights to say, no, he's staying here for the rest of the season, even if Villa were to find a suitable alternative. And in that situation, I guess Villa could offer a compensation payment. But given what Munro brings to the Swindon squad, I'm not sure that a few thousand pounds in cash would replace him. So I think for the next week and a half or so, it's a case of holding breath. First of all, seeing if someone comes in with a reasonable offer for a permanent move. I think it's very unlikely that he's going to get recalled to be sent out on loan somewhere. He's out of contract in the summer there. It feels like if it was to be going, it would be to go to another club on a permanent basis. And that means that the player has to want it. It means that the package that is offered by the potential buying club has to be suitable, and Villa have to be happy as well. There's lots of different things that go into it. Of course, it could happen. I've been remarkably optimistic, I think, from the get-go going in here about him staying. I still think that there is a good chance that he stays, but it's always foolish to commit one way or the other during any transfer window, because you end up looking like a right fool. So lots that going into it. And I think that it's important for supporters to sort of recognise the different elements that would go into this to making him actually leave this month. What we do know is he's very happy here. He's obviously playing in a successful side, influencing that team, gaining a lot of experience. And if he were to put himself in the shop window at the end of the season by being in the League Two team of the season and winning promotion, then that might not do his career much harm at all.
Yeah, we'll see if his agent wants to play the short game or the long game, I guess. We've kind of touched in terms of players going back. it very much does feel like Adam Murphy is on his way, as you've talked about already. And this takes us on to the next probable incoming, which you have reported to subscribers already, who is Fletcher Holman, a striker from Wolves. And firstly, how do we kind of assess his game? And I guess, are we about to sort of tip our hats and wonder quite what might have been with Prince Welayi-Bachiman?
Yeah, I think that Prince Welayi-Bachiman will be going back to Southampton. Whether or not that is recall or returned, I don't know. In terms of Holman, I mean, I've only seen what most others have seen in terms of clips. I think the club see him as a prospect, potentially that can play as a nine, sort of a sort of mini Drinnen kind of player. He might potentially start wider and then become a more central option, but he can certainly provide an option off of a target man. And he has an element of versatility about him as well. I think that in academy football, he's been shown to be a finisher, but it hasn't quite translated when he's had the loan spell at Solihull last year. So there's a lot of different things that go into any move like this and considerations as to what that player will bring to a club. What the type of players that they brought in on permanence in the summer that are similar to this have obviously settled in well in Joe Snowden and Philosophe Mabete. So if we can keep the faith that they will have identified another similarly qualified individual to benefit the squad, then potentially they might also have, you know, resale value down the line. But of the three, obviously, this is one that feels a little bit more of a punt. And, you know, at the moment, it's still not complete as we record. So lots to wait out on that as well. Again, this is Holloway stacking, racking, doing whatever he can to put together a bench that can make big inroads late in games and can provide different options. And, you know, honestly, I think he would just keep buying forwards if he was allowed to.
I think that's very likely. That reminds me, this is a very long way about, are you familiar with the Monty Python sketch, The Milkman?
I'm not off the top of my head, no.
No. It's essentially a milkman is tempted into the house of a very glamorous lady, and she beckons him into the sort of what appears to be the bedroom, and once upon a time, and he goes in with a wicked look on his face, only to discover a large number of milkmen there with a considerable number of beards. So I'm just kind of imagining something slightly off that, which is a room full of forwards who can't escape, and there's about 10 of them all stuck in there in a very tenuous metaphor. To be serious for a moment, God help us, on Fletcher Holman, there's a bit of a prospect for the future there, but I guess the other thing is Swindon are in very much win now mode, of course. So they must think they see something in him that can contribute immediately.
Yeah, I think that they see a bit of Paul Glatzel there, maybe with a bit more finishing potentially. Of course, Glatzel had the finishing when he first arrived and sort of evolved into a different sort of player. But I think that he certainly offers some element of cover there. Yeah, I think that it's both for the future and for now, but Holloway is not averse to signing a player for the future and using him now, and I think that might be more of the case with this one.
Yeah, so here we are with two players definitely in. Clearly there's some work, as you said, to be done on Holman at time of recording, but they're quite hopeful. Possibly two sort of loanees out. So do we think the three is... It feels like the three perhaps is likely to be the bulk of what they do, and the aim is to sort of get them done, I guess, have those all done ASAP and get the maximum out of them for this season. Or is there any other plans, do you think, for someone or somewhere else to be strengthened?
I think there might be at least one more coming in, though I'm not sure when that would be. And they're going to leave themselves a bit of contingency, obviously, in case anyone goes out that they weren't banking on going out. So Munro is one thing, and they will have their own targets for who would come in to replace him, and I'm pretty sure they would go out and seek a proper replacement, right, rather than relying on Billy Kirkman and Joel McGregor to sort of fill that role over the course of the second half of the season. But prior to that, I think there's another one that's in the works at the moment. I think Holloway wants to bring in as much as he can. And by the sound of it, it's still well within the bounds of their salary cost management protocol, the financial fair play for League Two. So there is some headroom there that they can use to their advantage. So no, I don't necessarily expect it to end at three. Whether there's a need for a lot more than three is probably a different question, and I don't think that there is. I think they're getting some players back now. They're establishing the core of their squad. They'll have their captain back in 3 weeks' time. I think all of that put together puts the club in a pretty decent place, barring any long-term injuries that might happen in the coming weeks.
And we've done all that without mentioning Gavin Kilkenny's new contract, which seems a little over enthusiastic of us. But why not? Transfer windows are for speculating. Perhaps we can muse a bit more on Kilkenny and his role another time. But safely signed up for is it 2028?
2028. It's a big old contract that's really important for the club, and it's well deserved, isn't it? From him, he adds something very different, and I think he's quickly becoming a favourite amongst fans. So another example of good business done early in this window.
And let us bow out then on an unusual thing in this transfer window by saying thank you, Mark Kennedy, because I think he was the one that really wanted Gavin Kilkenny in the first place. So there's a good legacy of the Mark Kennedy era, everyone, which I didn't think was likely to come over episode one, but there we are.